Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
The Department of Public Instruction gives local school districts reopening options, options that range from traditional in-person learning to all online. Protesters damage the Capitol, tear down two statues, and attack Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter. The Marquette poll says 59% of Wisconsin residents support the Black Lives Matter movement. The DNC says, sorry, Milwaukee, but the Joe Biden nominating process will be virtual. Both President Trump and Vice President Pence campaign here. Rewind, your week in review for June 26th.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Scott Bauer.
Hey, Scott, thanks for sitting in for the vacationing J.R. Ross. I really appreciate it. Are there any slow days in Wisconsin's capital anymore?
Well, it sure doesn't seem like it, does it?
No, it really, really doesn't. Okay, we will get to the protests and the damage to the Capitol, but I want to open today, Scott, with the DPI blueprint, 87 pages, because it affects every K-12 student, every parent, yourself. I'm a grandparent. I've got four kids in the Waukesha School District. The different options to reopen in this fall. So we talk about going back to in-person learning. Then we talk about physical distancing. Then we talk about virtual learning. So, Scott, let's talk about the four options that they presented dealing with physical distance learning. First of all, the four-day week, and I'll quickly describe it, and then you can give me your thoughts. Four-day week option. Each student, that would be elementary, middle, and high school, would report to a school, outdoor learning space, or community-based organizations 4 days a week. Virtual learning would still, those materials would still be distributed. And then 1 day a week would be used for teacher planning and pro-professional learning. Scott, one question I had, when they say one site of potential 4 day week scheduling, community-based organizations, do you read that to be potentially libraries, churches, YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, you know, Steve, I think the most important thing as we look at this DPI document that came out is to remember that it's not a mandate. It's guidelines giving school districts kind of some models to look at that they can use as they, you know, take bits and pieces from as they want to. And it's a document that's going to change over time based on feedback and based on changing circumstances with the coronavirus and school district reaction and whatnot. So the plan you're talking about, and there are others I think we'll talk about, is kind of like one model that they've put out there that says, you know, if this fits your circumstance, here's a way you could make it work. And whether that community building you referred to could mean a library or something else, I don't know. I'm guessing that there may be communities where that would make sense, and there are probably a lot where it wouldn't also.
The 4 day week option, the first one that we're just finishing discussing, that would be the easiest to implement. But let's talk about the 2 day rotation. Okay, under that, students report to school, outdoor learning space, or community-based organization 2 days per week, either on a Monday-Tuesday cycle, on a Thursday-Friday cycle, and again, they'd be provided with virtual learning materials, and 1 day a week would be used for teacher planning and professional learning. My question, Scott, if you're a family with, in the case of my son and daughter-in-law, four kids in the Waukesha school districts, what if they're assigned different rotations, and how would you, if you're a two-earner family with both parents working, wouldn't this be a potential nightmare?
That seems like a very, very difficult scenario to implement with any kind of ease for all the reasons you lay out and many, many more. That's one where it's hard to imagine how parents who are both working would be able to deal with something like that with younger children. That's why a lot of school districts, I think, are saying that they're going to have, they want to announce their plans as soon as possible to give families and parents the opportunity to plan for what that's going to look like in the fall. So if a district would say, this is our plan, you know, hopefully they'd give some time for families to adjust their schedule. But you're right, that particular schedule would be a nightmare for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, it just strikes me that it could be really hard to manage from a family standpoint. Option three, the AB week rotation. Okay, this is the 4-day, except half of the student population would report to school. Outdoor learning spaces or community-based organizations, four full days, 1 week, with the other half virtual learning that week, and then they'd switch off. Again, the 1 day off would give teachers a chance to professionally train and clean. Any thoughts on the AB week rotation, Scott?
I mean, at least on that one, you have a little more certainty week to week, where you would have, you know, half going in, half not. Seems like that might be an approach that some of the larger districts would take to try to cut down on the number of students who are in the building at any given time. The 1 day off a week, again, you've seen some pushback from some Republican lawmakers questioning the need to have a full day off to do cleaning. So again, I think, you know, we're seeing a push and pull between those who really want schools to reopen in a way that's as close to normal as possible, coupled with or put up against the tension of how to do that safely in this new public health environment that we're in.
Okay. And the fourth one I just find so intriguing. Elementary face-to-face and secondary virtual learning. Elementary students would start back to school first before the other levels. Elementary students would attend 4 days per week and are distributed across multiple sites. And it's important to note they would not only be in elementary and middle school building, that they would be in elementary plus middle school buildings. All secondary students continue to engage in virtual learning throughout the whole year. Now, a good friend of mine just retired as a very experienced teacher in Waukesha and Dane counties. She is certified as a virtual learner, and she says of this plan, not sustainable. And she adds, teachers pride themselves on building a classroom environment for learning, and if forced to use new space, it would be cold and possibly physically inappropriate. So, is this the most radical of the four ideas, Scott?
Well, I know my high schooler would not like that plan, and I think a lot of high school students are anticipating going back to class in some form or fashion in the fall. So, I saw that one. I questioned how that would work, you know, because there's also the issues of that we saw this spring, that a lot of students, no matter their age, rely on the school for far more than just book learning. They rely on it for food. They rely on it for, you know, social services, a lot of other things that they can't get at home. So again, I think most districts are going to do the best they can to get as close to normal as they can, and they'll use these DPI guidelines to find some ideas and some roadmaps to do that. But I think we're going to see as many different districts and schools as there are, we'll probably see that many different approaches come September.
Well, just some other points in the report prior to hearing from Governor Evers. Scott, the report said that there are, as we know, there are inequities in our current system. Rural school districts don't have the broadband access. You're well aware of the achievement gap in Wisconsin. But what about special ed students? What about sports? What about English as a second language? What about advanced placement? What about counseling? What about some of these extracurricular activities? And my friend, the retired teacher, says volunteers, they're probably going to serve no more. And that's something I've been a literacy volunteer at Mendota Elementary here in Madison for a while. So any wrap-up thoughts on all the issues that are at play here?
No, I mean, I think you raise a lot of really good ones. And just as there were no easy answers when everybody went home in March, there's really no easy answers now as they try to figure out what to do in the fall. And things could change. You know, a plan put in place today for September may not be the best plan when that time actually rolls around. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Okay, now let's listen to Governor Evers, who twice in his last press conference said, look, these are DPI recommendations. Well, the governor says it best. Could we just hear from the governor, please?
The Department of Public Instruction does not make these decisions. They have laid out, frankly, a great number of options for people. And those are options. And if school districts want to do something that is not one of those options, that's where the rubber hits the road, and that's where decisions will be made. There's no way that the Department of Public Instruction is telling people they have to have 10 kids in a room. That's just not accurate. What is accurate is they laid out multiple options for people and decision makers at the local level to help guide their decision making. And that's what we anticipate is going to happen.
Well, Scott, now let's talk about the incidents around the Capitol Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. Okay, there was a protester arrested, and that triggered a protest. And as the evening wore on, the protesters, they were masked. They were meeting. Senator Tim Carpenter was taking a video. They approached him. You and I have seen that. They approach him. He is assaulted. It's very interesting because the Madison mayor noted that Carpenter is, number one, a liberal who fought the Act 10 changes in 2011 that we both covered. So I don't think they knew who they were attacking. Do you?
No, they clearly didn't. And if you see the images from that night, he's dressed in, you know, just normal street clothes. There's nothing to indicate that he was anything other than a guy taking pictures, which they didn't want anyone doing at that point.
Right. They toppled the statue of Forward at the head of State Street. They toppled the statue of Colonel Hans Christian Hegg, who led a Norwegian troops in the Civil War and was a staunch anti-abolitionist, did not believe in slavery. That's very ironic. You and I have seen the damage. The governor toured the Capitol, windows broken, doors damaged. A Molotov cocktail started a small fire in the city county building. The violence was denounced in statements by Governor Evers, Republican senators, Madison mayor, Dane County executive. We'll be hearing from a couple of Republican legislators in a few moments. But one protester said this of the Forward statue: we're not moving forward, we're moving backward. Protester Ebony Anderson Carter. Before we hear from Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Steinicke, Scott, the Capitol is pretty, it's a beautiful building. You and I have spent much of our lives there. So I'm just curious in your personal reaction to the damage to a place where we've spent, as I said, thousands of hours working.
Sure. I mean, it's a complicated issue, and there are obviously strong feelings all around on what's going on here. We spoke to protesters who said, these statues make it seem like Wisconsin is a progressive state when it comes to race relations, and it's a lie. And these people are representing something that's not true, and that's why they have to come down. We've also heard from a lot of people who say it sends a bad message, and it's a wrong message to take down statues that represent to a lot of people women's suffrage. And Hans Christian Hegg, who you mentioned, was fought for the Union and was an abolitionist. So it's an ongoing, really interesting turn of events here as we continue to have this discussion about race relations in the state, country, and world, and also this growing debate over who ought to be memorialized in statues. And it's going beyond the Capitol. Yesterday, a Black student leader at the University of Wisconsin argued that the Abe Lincoln statue on Bascom Hill ought to come down. And we're obviously seeing this debate and conversation all over the country. And it's a fascinating one. I think almost everyone has been very vocal against the violence that's happened. But this is going to be an ongoing conversation here in the state for quite a while. especially when we get to the point of deciding or determining what happens to the statues, whether they come back or something else comes back or what exactly happens next.
Okay, now let's hear from Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke and Speaker Voss, their press conference the morning after the statues were torn down. Please.
No police presence when the Capitol was being vandalized, no police presence when statues were being taken down, no police presence when a sitting Democratic state senator was being assaulted. This is a failure of leadership at all levels in the city of Madison, and it has to end. The governor has to articulate what he is going to do to ensure the safety of state property, the safety of the citizens, the safety of the people that work here, and more importantly, the safety of the citizens that travel around the state to come down here and have their voices heard in a peaceful way. He's failing us on all levels right now, and that has to end.
It should have never gotten to this point. When we look at the city of Madison, where just a week ago the mayor had to apologize for making a video praising the police and the hard job that they do, we see that Governor Evers has basically stood silent until today when he did his walk around to be able to see what was going on in downtown Madison. State Street occurred weeks ago, and very little happened afterward. People have not been prosecuted, people have not been held accountable, and that has to change. If a police officer commits an injustice, they need to be held accountable and put in jail for the crime that they committed. It also means that if a protester tears down the statue or attacks a state senator or goes and blocks traffic and attacks people in their vehicles, they will be held accountable too. But we have not seen that happen in the city of Madison. This should be something that we can hopefully get bipartisan consensus on, that crime is wrong and that people who commit it should be prosecuted.
Scott, I want to stay on this for a little bit, because by the end of Wednesday, the governor had activated in a limited way the guard to potentially come back and protect state property, e.g. the Capitol and the buildings around the Capitol, because we should also note the Tommy Thompson Center's front door was broken. But I'm also curious, Scott, your reaction to President Trump yesterday saying in the town hall with Hannity that the violence, the tearing down of statues would not have happened if Scott Walker was still governor. Your thoughts?
I don't even really know what to make of that statement. I'm not quite sure what he means, if he means that Scott Walker would have had more security there, or there wouldn't have been the anger, or, you know, I don't know. I do know that there's been a lot of talk about the Act 10 protests, how many people there were at the Capitol, how those, we didn't see the violence that we're seeing now recently with these protests, and the National Guard was never called out during Act 10, that the security was all done with State Patrol and Sheriff's Department, Capitol Police. So, you know, different times, different situation. The Guard was called out. They were not present. They weren't needed the other night. So we'll see going forward if we kind of hit the culmination of the violence the other night, or if we're in store for more.
I keep waiting on DOA to give us a damage estimate for the Capitol. Have you heard any, my friend?
I have not.
Okay. All right. The Marquette University Law School poll was released. I want to focus in on just five of these questions. The first one, they asked 805 registered voters, do you support President Trump's handling of protests after the death of George Floyd? 30% supported, 58% did not support. Mr. Franklin said the president's standing on this issue is weaker than his handling of the economy and the COVID-19 virus. Significant, Scott, do you think?
I mean, it's just another piece of bad news for the president that he's had in the past couple of months. You mentioned coronavirus. The poll shows unhappiness with the response there. You know, handling of the feelings after the George Floyd death, you know, that's a very, again, sensitive, tough subject. Obviously, the poll shows people aren't feeling that President Trump has navigated that well. Another negative for him that I think will play into another number you're going to have here maybe next or shortly on his standing against Joe Biden currently in Wisconsin.
Right. Okay. I also want to note that another question, They asked the 805 registered voters if they support Black Lives Matter. I think that came back at 59 or 60%. But two other questions I found unique and I wanted to include in this show. It's interesting to me when you break out by race, these two questions. Do you feel safe around police? White respondents, 90% safe, 8% anxious. African Americans, 43% safe, 44%, I'm sorry, 44% anxious. Yes, I'll get that right. Hispanics, 72% safe, 28% anxious. Scott, just any closing thoughts? African Americans, twice as likely to feel anxious around police than white Americans. I just find this interesting. It's the first time you and I have seen numbers like that.
Yeah, I mean, it sheds light on the feelings that are out there and that are fueling a lot of the protests we're seeing and the calls for change that I think we'll see debated in not only our legislature, but many other state houses around the country.
Yeah, and then just one more question broken out by race. Are police too quick to use deadly force? Whites, 38%, yes. And 51% no. African Americans, 68% yes. 25% no. And Hispanics, 71% yes. 29% no. So it basically goes along with the last question. Okay, as you alluded to, Scott, another question from the Charles Franklin MU poll. Survey, June 14th through 18th. You support President Trump or Democrat Joe Biden. Biden, 49, Trump, 48. 8 percentage points, slight gain from May. How significant?
Well, it's I believe it's the biggest lead Joe Biden has had in this poll to date. So that's significant. It's also worth remembering that 4 years ago at this exact point, Hillary Clinton was up 6 points in the Marquette poll. So that bears remembering. It's also important to put the or helpful to put the Marquette poll in the context of a couple other polls that came out. One, a Fox News poll in May that showed a similar lead for Joe Biden, and a New York Times poll that came out the day after Marquette that I believe showed Biden with an 11-point lead. So there's definitely, at this point in time, it appears that Joe Biden has a lead in Wisconsin, just as Hillary Clinton did at this point in time. As we all know, polls can change, public opinion can change, and we are miles and miles away from the November election.
Okay, and then just one more question from the poll. With safer at home order ended, do you support letting children return to school in the fall? This goes back to our first topic. Comfortable, 54%, not comfortable, 38, more than a third. I'm just pretty intrigued that more than a third of respondents are not comfortable sending their kids back to classrooms. What are your thoughts? You and your wife obviously talk about it all the time.
Well, and that poll was taken before there was a lot of press in the past few days about the virus, rearing its head yet again, dramatically in some states and less dramatically here, but still on the uptick. So I think that is a question that every poll, the numbers could potentially be dramatically different based on the situation with COVID-19.
Yeah. Okay. New topic. Democratic National Committee made some decisions today on the Milwaukee. We can no longer call it a convention, can we, my friend?
it's a meeting.
The meeting. Okay. They shrunk the Milwaukee meeting or the event. DNC members told their delegates, cast your Joe Biden votes from your home, but there will be many Milwaukee DNC officials in Milwaukee. It'll be kind of the base for this launch, August 17 through 21. They moved it from the Fiserv Forum to the Wisconsin Center. As I said, Biden will give his acceptance speech from Milwaukee. Party officials will still visit. The mayor was disappointed. No one could have predicted what we've experienced as a nation, as a world, as a city over the last 4 months. Obviously, this is not something that I'm excited about. Not really surprising, Scott. You and I have seen this coming for weeks.
Yeah, I think everyone did. And it's similar to what everyone has experienced on different levels. You know, your heart maybe is holding out that things are going to be the way you hope they would be, but then your brain is telling you they're probably not. I think Democrats' hearts were saying, we hope we can pull off something close to what we had planned, but in their brains, they knew that that probably wasn't going to happen. And the news came out this week that it wasn't. You know, they were going to downsize the venue, downsize the event, financially for the city of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin. It's a huge negative. Even I think it was Scott Walker I saw tweeting about how this was bad news for the state. Scott Walker had worked to get the convention here when he was governor, seeing the economic opportunity and frankly seeing the chance for him to capitalize on it politically, to be kind of a go-to talking head counterpoint during the convention in Wisconsin. So I think there's bipartisan sadness for the economic impact for certain, and I think Democrats feel a sadness that this certainly a once in a generation opportunity, maybe a once in a lifetime opportunity to host a convention is not going to happen the way they had hoped.
Well, let's talk about the economic impact on Milwaukee, not only of the DNC event or meeting, Summerfest canceled, State Fair, no Brewers playing right now, no Bucks going for that, Giannis going for the NBA. Milwaukee just keeps reeling from some of these decisions, right?
Yeah, Milwaukee and everywhere. That we are going to see municipal and state budgets are going to be a disaster. And when that comes home to roost, there's going to be some major decisions that have to be made sooner rather than later due to lost revenue because of this thing. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. We got time for one more topic. Let's listen to President Trump at the Marinette Shipyard which just got, I believe, was it a $5 billion contract, Scott? Mm-hmm. And then let's listen to Vice President Pence. They were both coming back to Wisconsin. So let's listen to parts of their speeches, please.
As part of my administration's rebuilding of the United States military, you were awarded a contract to build the next generation of guided missile frigate for the United States Navy. This contract will support your 1,500 full-time employees, and it will also enable you to hire another 1,000 people all across the shipyards in Wisconsin. It's one of the biggest contracts you've ever seen in the state. An estimated 15,000 additional new jobs will be created through the Wisconsin supply chain. As long as I'm your president, America will never lose that shipbuilding talent or capability. It won't lose that excellence or the expertise of the men and the women of Marinette Marine.
You said yes to President Donald Trump in 2016, and I know that Wisconsin's going to say yes to four more years of President Donald Trump in November of 2020. Four more years means more support for our troops. Four more years means more jobs. Four more years means more judges. And it's going to take at least four more years to drain that swamp. So, Wisconsin, I need you to bring it. The silent majority can be silent no more.
Any surprises in the themes chosen by President Trump and Vice President Pence? The president, of course, talked about the economy, the additional jobs for the Marinette Shipyard, Vice President Pence, the Faith in America tour, attended a roundtable discussion of school choice programs at Waukesha STEM Academy. Your thoughts on them? This continues to say, Wisconsin, you are very, very important, right?
Not only that, but it says, Wisconsin Republicans, we need you to come home. You know, these are events, bread and butter Republican topics, areas, going to Waukesha County to talk about school choice and religious freedom, going to Marinette Naval Shipyard, shipbuilder building ships for the Navy, great setting for a president to make arguments about national defense and building up the military. These are, they were both in parts of the state where they need to do extremely well to have a chance in November. They need their voters to come home. They're It's been well documented how President Trump underperformed in the WoW counties, and in the Fox or in the Green Bay media market where Marinette rests. He did well, but he needs to do well there again in November. So yes, we will definitely be seeing more of them sooner rather than later.
Okay, great. A couple of programming notes. First of all, because of the July 4th holiday, Rewind will be on hiatus. We'll be back on July 10. Secondly, Wisconsin and I will be starting its candidate interviews next week. We're going to try to have short interviews with 30 candidates for the legislature. Scott, thanks very much for filling in for JR. I'm Steve Walders.
I'm Scott Bauer.
That's Rewind for June 26th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.